Today we're going to begin with Revi, the fourth reading, which is chapter 14 in the book of Deuteronomy, Chumash Devarim. Bonim atem laHashem elokeichem. You are children to the Lord your God, says the Torah. Lo sizgodedu. You shall not lacerate yourself. You shall not tear the hair out from the crown of your head, between your eyes, in grief for somebody who has died. So Rashi does not comment on Bonim Atem, doesn't talk about this idea of you are children to the Lord your God. But he does comment on the business of Lo Sizgodedu. What exactly is the Torah prohibiting? Says Rashi, Lo sitnu gedido veseret. Do not break the skin, cut yourself, lacerate yourself, bivsarchem, on your flesh, almeis, when you are in pain over the loss of a loved one. Kederech shaha emoiri emoisim. This is the way of the ancient Amorite pagan people. That's what they used to do. Yeah. And you shouldn't do this. You shouldn't mourn the way they mourn. You shouldn't gash yourself the way they used to gash themselves. Why? Lefi sha'atem bonev shomokim. Because you are the children of Hashem. Ve'atem ru'uyin li'yes noyim. And therefore it's appropriate for you to be nice looking. Le'gdudim u'mekeirochim. Not lacerated and not with tufts of hair missing, with bald spots. That's what Rashi says. That's the literal meaning. What's b'nei nechem? Between your eyes? Well, it can't be between your eyes literally. There's very few people who actually have hair between their eyes. Some guys have that unibrow, but it's a very rare thing. So Rashi says it means etzel ha-padachas, at the forehead, meaning at the crown of your head. This is the spot where tefillin goes. That's called Bein Ha'inayim. Just like tefillin has to be between the eyes, does not mean to put tefillin smack over here between the eyes. It means on the crown of your head. So too, we refer also to the concept of tearing the hair out from that spot. U'b'mokim acher hu'aymer. Elsewhere, going back to the book of Leviticus, it says, in Parshas Emor, le'yikrchu korcha b'roisham. They shall not tear hair out anywhere in their head. And here we emphasize Beinoinayim. So Rashi says, one verse explains the other. Lases kol ha'reish kebeinoinayim. So that the whole head should be, halachically speaking, like between the eyes. The Maharal explains this Rashi in the following way. Because you are the children of Hashem, so therefore you have to live by a higher code. And therefore you have a greater amount of sacred responsibility, which is not disembodied from your physical existence. It even translates into your physical appearance, that you shouldn't look gashed and lacerated and damaged. But instead, you should not do what the Emerium do. And instead, you should live in a different fashion. And Maharal says that it's not just because Bonim Atem LaHashem, the beginning of verse 1, because you are children to Hashem, but then you take a look at the verse 2, and it says, Ki Am Kodesh Ata, because you are a holy people, Hashem Elokecha. Uvachov Bochar Hashem, you are a holy nation, and God has selected and chosen you. Li Yesh Leilo Am, that it should be for you as a people. You should be a skula, a treasure, Mikol Am, from amongst all the nations, Asher al pnei ha'adama, who are upon the face of the earth. So the Maharal explains, basing himself on Rashi, that because, precisely because of your uniqueness, precisely because of your special nature, precisely because you are called children of Hashem, precisely because you are the people who is Am Kodesh, a holy nation, precisely because Hashem selected and chose you, that's why you have other responsibilities which incorporate also not only the spirit, but even the flesh. And of course, we know there's an inseparable link between spirit and flesh, body and soul. The Ibn Ezra says like this, He says, it's not just a question of appropriateness. He says, we're talking about banim atam Hashem lekeichem. What if we're not Hashem's children? What if we're just am kodesh ata? Why does it have to start with your children? First we start with children, and only afterwards we talk about am kodesh. Why do we have to go from one and then to the other? So the Ibn Ezra says the following. He says, you have to know that Hashem loves you. He loves you more than a parent loves a child. And because He loves you more than a parent loves a child, that's why you shouldn't do this to yourself. You know, when you love your children and they do things to harm themselves, it hurts a parent more than the kids even. Only a parent understands how much it hurts when children do things to lacerate either their body or their soul. It physically, literally hurts the parents. So he says, you should know that Hashem loves you so much, the way you behave will necessarily impact HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Because He put Himself into that situation. He made you like His children, and because of that, He loves you. And that love means that what you do with yourself impacts Him. It makes a difference to Him. Incidentally, in case you're wondering why the Torah uses two expressions, the idea of a seret and a gedida, the Gemara in Makkos on page Chaf Aleph says that a seret is inflicted by hand, and a gedida is inflicted with a knife or an implement. So you lacerate people, literally, physically tear their skin open with their own hands, and they sometimes use an implement. There are certain people who follow this ancient pagan custom today because they don't realize that their quasi-monotheistic religion is basically a knockoff of ancient pagan practice. And therefore, they actually cut themselves and they have blood go all over themselves, and in this way they express their devotion to their God. But really, this is an ancient pagan practice that was appropriated at the time by whoever founded their religion. The Rosh says, Bonim atem la Hashem lekechem means, you are Hashem's children, and because you are Hashem's children, you are never orphaned. So the Amorite, when he lost his father or mother, he said, that's it. I lost my parents. The Yid says, Hashem is my father. I never lose my parents. I'm never alone. And therefore, the grief is not as intense. The Amorite's life falls apart. But I have, Avi Shabashamayim, I'm always Hashem's child. Ramban says, when there is death, there is a great loss. And it's a loss which it's appropriate to weep and grieve over. And he says, the truth is, though, that grieving has a limit. It should not go so far as to influence or impact our physical corporeality, because we have to take comfort in knowing that our dead have surely now been welcomed into Hashem's hands, and surely they have fulfilled their destiny, and surely Hashem now welcomes them, and in that we take some comfort. In other words, that the grief we feel is somewhat mitigated, somewhat limited. Why? Because we live with this faith. And living with faith that we are banim atem l'Hashem lekeichem enables us to overcome grief in the most difficult of times. The Or HaChaim explained that lois is goydedu, this prohibition of lacerating oneself when a person dies, is because the person is never gone. The person didn't get lost altogether. He metaphorizes, he says, imagine somebody sent the child away on business. And then later, he's far away on business. So he says he's only lost to his family. Doesn't mean he's lost. Doesn't mean he's lost. He's somewhere good. He's just not connected to his family now. They can't physically see him. So the Or HaChaim says, as such, you don't gash your body, because the loss is not an absolute loss. It's a loss only in a superficial way. And perhaps what the Or HaChaim is alluding to here is what Rabbeinu Bechaya says when he says that when we lose a loved one, we know that it's only the loss of the flesh, only the loss of the body, it's not the loss of the spirit. And therefore our clothes are superficial. The clothes are something on the externality. Clothes can be put on and taken off. But he says the soul is like us, ourselves, that's never lost. So therefore we shouldn't inflict mortification, pain, damage, injury to our own physical body, because we should know that the pain and the loss is only insofar as not the neshama is concerned, but the superficial reality of the guf is concerned. And perhaps this is what Or HaChaim is referring to when he speaks about this. There's a beautiful letter from the Rebbe to a grieving widow in the Yom Kippur War, where he writes to her that the connection between people is not only a bodily connection, it's also a spiritual connection. And therefore, even when the body is lost, doesn't mean the connection is lost. The connection continues, and the neshama lives on for eternity. And elsewhere, the Rebbe wrote to somebody very similarly along the lines of the Eruv Chaim, that if you knew that your son was fine, he was fine, he was good, everything was taken care of him, you wouldn't be able to speak to him, but you knew that everything was good with him, would you be able to take comfort? And the person responded, yes. The Rebbe said, you can take comfort in that. That is, in fact, the case. And as many have noted, when a kaddish is said, when a mitzvah is done, it's like sending a telegram, an email, a WhatsApp message. It's like sending regards. And it brings solace. It brings a sense of peace to the neshama to know that the family continues to live on and to be mikad Hashem Shomayim, to sanctify Hashem's name. The Targum Yerushalmi emphasizes here that much of the laceration was not only connected to grief, but also to idol worship. But all the Mefarshim don't speak about that. And I think the reason the Mefarshim don't speak about that is because we begin, Banamatam Lashem Lekechem. If this was about divine worship and not idol worship, why do we have to begin with the fact that Banamatam, your children to Hashem? The Banamatam, your children to Hashem, as if couching our relationship with God in familial terms, in flesh and blood terms, in parent-child terms, that indicates something other than simply the concept of idolatry or idol worship. Because you are a holy nation. So Rashi notes that two things are stated here. Number one, you are a holy nation. Number two, and you Hashem has chosen. Is it you are a holy nation? Or is it that Hashem has chosen you? Did Hashem choose you because you're a holy nation? Why emphasis on you are a holy nation and Hashem has chosen you? So Rashi says, Ki am kodesh ata, for you are a holy nation. Hashem here, in his Torah, is enumerating to us the different levels of holiness. Number one, kedushas atzmecha me'aveisecha. The holiness we possess is not ours. It's from our ancestry. Meaning, to the Jewish people who left Mitzrayim, because they are children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So because we have the ancestry of the paternity and maternity of the patriarchs and matriarchs, that's why I'm Kodesh Ata. That's why we're a holy nation. Now, in addition to this, that we are the descendants of Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sar, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, V'oid uvecha bachar Hashem. In addition to this, Hashem has selected and chosen you. So there's two separate things here. Number one, there's the innate, organic virtue we have as being the children of who our parents or ancestors were. Number two, there's the fact that Hashem chose us, and the Bechira, Hashem choosing the selection, that happened by Yetzias Mitzrayim, or as Avud Raham writes, by Matan Torah. So what does this really mean? And why, if we're Am Kodesh Ata, and that's why we have all these responsibilities, like Maharal says, because Am Kodesh Ata, that's why we have to be careful even with the way we are physically, because our holiness can't be disembodied, it has to be connected to the flesh too. So why do we have to emphasize the concept of U'b'chol Bacha Yisrael? So, if you join me now on page Kuf Pei Hei, in Simuchav Dalet, of the Buterim L'Chumash, the Rebbe sets out here, Yesh Levayr Es HaMayla Shebechirasei Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Yisrael. We set out here to clarify, to explain the virtue of choice. Is God pro-choice? He is pro-choice. Depends which choice, though. The virtue of the selection, of the choice that Hashem made, as it says, Uvecha bachar Hashem, and in you Hashem is chosen. Legabe kedushasam ha'atzmis shel b'nei Yisrael, vis-a-vis, or in comparison with, the holiness, the innate, intrinsic holiness of the b'nei Yisrael. In other words, as follows. If we were to say something extraordinary about the Jewish people, and then we say, and not only have this extraordinary innate organic holiness, and Hashem has chosen you, it must be adding something. There must be something in the concept of, and you are a holy people that Hashem is, a holy people, that's organic, that's innate, that's natural, and in addition to the organic, innate, natural holiness, and Hashem has chosen you. What are you adding? What is the addition of, and Hashem has chosen you? How has U'b'chol Bachar Yisrael changed something? So we set out here to understand the virtue of choice. How by God's choice did something change? How and why by God's choice did our relationship become more profound? Did our value appreciate? What about the what changed it? What is it about choice? And so the Rebbe says, quoting voluminous Hasidic teachings, Bechira amitis, real choice, meaning if you speak about the virtue of something only because of choice, Neivas ach verak miritzoyne hachofshi shel habeicher, that comes from a very deep place. I have the freedom to choose. It's a very deep part of me. People seek the freedom. People want choice. People don't want to be legislated to. I want to be able to choose. And the way that they're really freed is kishahu mishuchror lachlutin mikol hashpah chitzenius, is when they are really and truly freed of any external realities, they make the choice. So, you know, look, in certain communist countries of old, maybe even of today, they used to have democratic elections. Or so. And basically, you knew who you voted for, or they knew who you voted for. If you voted for the wrong person, you might be arrested. You might be sent off to a gulag. You might lose your job. Your children might get thrown out of school, et cetera, et cetera. But you have the freedom of choice. You can choose. You can choose to vote for our glorious leader, or you can choose to vote for the horrible opposition. Anyway, it makes no difference, because anyway, we're not going to say the opposition won, and anyway, he won't win. But by the way, if you vote for the opposition, there's a lot of funny things that might start happening to you. So when you close the curtain on the ballot box, do you really have freedom of choice? No, of course not. You did so under duress. You may have chosen, in theory, or maybe in practice, but theoretically speaking, there was no choice. So let's expand this a little bit. What happens if a person loves chocolate ice cream and does not like royal vanilla ice cream, and he gets a choice? So what would you like? It's your choice. Would you like royal vanilla, or would you like Dutch chocolate? You love chocolate. You can't stand vanilla. Did you really make a choice? Well, in theory, you did make a choice, but did you really make a choice? Huh? The choice is highly limited because it was predictable. And the only way you would have chosen the vanilla is if maybe you wanted to practice an odd form of self-mortification. In some way, having the less delightful pleasure. I don't know. It was obvious. There was two chairs to sit on. One was really uncomfortable, and one was really comfortable. And it was quite obvious that one was uncomfortable, one was comfortable. And it was really surprising, but you chose to sit in the comfortable chair. Is it really a choice? In other words, does the fact that you chose this because you chose it, or because something caused you to choose it? Hamusik bechira, the notion, the concept of choice, b'mashmo'usi hamleya, in its fullest. I'm not saying you don't have a choice. You have a choice always, but in its fullest sense, misyaches lematzev would have to be attributed to a situation. Shebayimdim lefaneinu shnei dvarim shavim lachalutin. Where what's before us is two exactly identical things. And in fact, en kol sibo lahadif lo davar echad al pnei mishneo. There's no reason to choose one, at least no overt, obvious reason that you see or know why one should be chosen over the other. Shekein, im yeshna maila kol shehi, if there's a virtue in one versus the other, be echad advarim lachavere, harei maila zu mashpia al habeche livchebe. Why did he choose A, B, and C? Well, look at this person. Look at all his choices. Look at his life. Look what he likes. Look at his dislikes. You'll know what he chooses. You'll know why he chose. It's obvious. It's not really a question. Why did you choose that? Because that's what I like. That's why I chose that. Why didn't you choose something you don't like? Because most people want things they like. People want to be happy. Except people have something wrong with them. They love to be miserable. So why did you choose that? Because I love to be miserable. But the reason why people chose it, it's not the purest form of choice. It's not the expression of selection that comes from the deepest part of my psyche. The real freedom is I can choose as I please for absolutely no other reason than that's what I chose. Let me frame it a little bit differently. Imagine that there were to be a number of chairs look all the same, and a very, very famous person, a very, very respected person came and happened to sit on one of those chairs. And that chair would become special. But you would look at the chair and say, why is this chair special more than the other ones? I said, you know who sat in this chair? But if one chair was a very beautiful and a prominent chair, and one chair was very ordinary, and you say, why is this chair special? I said, I know why, because it's beautiful, and it's prominent, and it's well made, and it's comfortable. He said, well, yeah, that too. But also, you know who sat over here. So the virtue of the choice is only really fully emphasized when it could have been either one. And there was no overt reason to choose one over the other. So what makes it special? The fact that it was chosen. That's what makes it special. The question is, the special nature of Am Yisrael as being Hashem's chosen people, are we special because we're special, or are we special because we're chosen? And if we're chosen because we're special, we're not really special because we're chosen. It's like a riddle, but it makes sense. It makes sense. Because I'm not special because I'm chosen. I was chosen because I'm special. Where does this kind of bechira, this kind of choice come from? How does a person choose between two things which are, well, essentially identical? It must be that must come from the deepest recesses of the inner psyche. It's something that very personal, as they say, certain choices are very personal. You can't really explain why somebody would have chosen. Of course, ultimately, there's a reason for a choice. Everybody has a reason for a choice. But it's not obvious or overt. This is something that's very, very personal because it's who this person is. This came from the deepest level of consciousness. Freed of any external influences. That's the key here. Freed of external influences. Zuhi bechira chofshes amitis. That, my dear friends, is real choice. That's real choice. When there's not a superficial virtue for one versus the other. That's because I chose. Many years ago, I once attended a dinner where Peter Munk, the famous magnate, was one of the wealthiest Canadians, one of the wealthiest Jews. You know, he's Barrick Gold. He was being honored. And he gave a very interesting speech. He spoke about the fact that in life he had made many choices, but his choices were always under duress. Interesting to hear a billionaire speak about duress. What was his duress? I did this, he said, or that because I had business interests, because I had other interests. I was always doing things to please others. I was always doing things because I was living in this milieu and I had to do what others wanted, he says. But, he says, now is the end of my life. This is actually almost 10 years ago. Now is the end of my life, and now I'm going to be choosing the things that I want to choose, and nobody's going to influence me, and this is my charities. And unfortunately, they're not yeshivas, and they're not kollelim, and they're not shuls. He's into different stuff. But that was his point. He said, I'm going to choose. Nobody's going to influence me. And this is, he said, in my opinion, the only real choice a person has. Towards the end of his life, where he gives his tzedakah, his benefaction, that's the only real choice. It's very interesting. He said, this is where I'm going to be me. This is what I'm going to choose. It's the idea of Bechira. He says, so why did you choose to do business with this person? Because he wanted to make more money. Why choose to do business with that? Because the fallout would be too painful. Because there was too much to lose. He said, here, I'll do as I please. I'm going to select my charities, my choices, and that's where I'm going to focus. And so, my friends, hu adin legabei bechirasei shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'Yisrael. This whole metaphor is really speaking about us. It's speaking about us and God. Or God's choice. Ahavasei shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu levnei Yisrael, the love of God towards the children of Israel. Noivas comes l'chol ereish mehiyesim banim l'makim. We are Hashem's children. Banim atem l'Hashem alekeichem. And then, this idea of banim atem zuhi, this ultimately means kedushas atzmecha me'aveisecha. Banim atem Hashem alekeichem is, Hashem says, I adopt Avraham and Sarah as my children. So therefore, since I adopt Avraham and Sarah as my children, their children will be my children. Because if you adopt, and then those children have children, they become naturally, automatically, your adopted grandchildren. So kedushascha, your holiness, kedushas atzmecha, where does your holiness come from? Me'aveisecha. Because it comes from your ancestry. This is the holiness that we inherited from our holy ancestors. And it is by virtue and thanks to those choices that Avram and Sarah made that we have that natural holiness and we are called Banu Lamakim. Ella, the problem, the thing is, Shazuya Avashiesh Lasiba. Then this love that Hashem has for us has a reason. There's a cause for that love. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ayiv is Bnei Yisrael. Hashem indeed loves the Jewish people. Beglala Yosef Bonav, because it's his children. Because he adopted Avraham and Sarah. And then Yitzchak and Rivka. And Yaakov and Rachel and Leah, the patriarchs and the matriarchs. So automatically, we, the grandchildren, are going to be loved by God. Of course, who doesn't love his grandchildren? Kishem Shav Ayiv is Bnei B'tivei, just like a parent loves a child by his nature. Ahava Neva Seife Mitchuna HaKayem is Bnei Yisrael. But the love is caused, the love is triggered by an ever-present virtue within the children of Israel. It's not Asher Bochar Banu. It's not because he selected us. It would just be, we were special, so he selected us. But that's not really then special because he chose us. That's like choosing the comfortable chair. That's like choosing the beautiful plate of food. That's like choosing the clothes that fits you. That does not come from the deepest element or rung or essence or dimension of the chooser. This is the profound message that Rashi is trying to add, and he says, in addition to the fact that we are special, because we are special, in addition to this, and Hashem has chosen you. In other words, in addition to the love that God feels for each and every single member of Am Yisrael, because we are his children, there's a deeper rung, there's something in addition to that. And that's amuka v'nizgava oid yeser. It's more profound. It's deeper even than that. That's ahava she'enin avah mishum davar chitzeni. This is a love that comes not from any external cause. Gam loyal ma'al le'seyam ha'nifloy shol b'nei Yisrael. Not even the lofty virtues of b'nei Yisrael. Kibonav shtar kadosh baruch hu like Hashem's children. Ella, you know where this one comes from? This comes from mebechirase ha'chofshis shtar kadosh baruch hu b'vad. This comes from the purest free choice. The purest free choice. Zuhi ha'avo ha'muka b'yeser. This then is the deepest love possible. Ha'pnimis b'yeser. The most profound of all. Ahava ha'nevas me'atzmusei u'muhusei shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A love that hails from the very essence and quiddity of divinity. And so, in that sense, God's pro-choice.
Did you really have choices?